Welcome to Scott Holm Podcast. We are back to you in our usual Wednesday evening spot, previewing another installment of the Bayou Bucket Game, and of course, recapping the usual busy, busy fall sports week in the world of the Houston Cougars. Of course, we appreciate you, whoever you are and wherever you are, Houston Cougar fan or interested outsider. Really appreciate you downloading, listening to this episode of our little podcast. And I do realize that football, really for the vast majority of fan bases out there, I would say ours included, plays a pretty outsized role in determining kind of the mood of Cougar fans toward Cougar athletics at large. But for most of the teams we're going to talk about tonight, I'd actually say the mood is quite good. Wouldn't you say, Dustin, my good friend and co-host?
Yeah, as I say, we've got four sports on the docket, and I think three of the four we're going to be talking pretty positively about tonight in terms of what we saw from them in this past week. So, you know, obviously, I think most of us Cougar fans, if we're being completely honest, would love for football to be one of the three that we were feeling more positive about. But I think it was a pretty solid week to look back on in terms of Cougar fall sports as a whole.
Learned that people seem to care about football. And don't worry, we have plenty to talk about with regards to the Bayou Bucket tonight. But of course, mentioning at the top, we are proud members of the 10-12 Network, our Big 12 Network partners, talking all things Big 12 over there. A number of great school-specific podcasts as well. Please follow them on social media at TEN12 Network. Subscribe to the 10-12 podcast wherever you put podcasts in your ears. And of course, we are also brought to you by the good folks at the good brand, Homefield Apparel, homefieldapparel.com. They have a great Cougar collection, recently refreshed, lots of really awesome Cougar t-shirts in there. I wore the gray Cougar Paw shirt to last Saturday's home opener. I thought was a great choice for the occasion, even if the occasion didn't live up to it. So you, the listener, no matter who you are, no matter how much you like or don't like us, or how much you're tolerating this podcast, if you use the promo code HOLMAN12, that's HOLMAN12, you could save 15% off your first order. Just enter that promo code at checkout. Easy squeezy. Just the easiest way you're going to save money out there on some just fantastic, incredibly comfortable vintage Cougar shirts. Want to mention also really awesome, and part of why I like Homefield, not just constantly releasing, you know, the biggest names out there. They had some really awesome in the last week or so Mac School releases. They had North Dakota State release, I think, Monday, that is having me ponder, Dustin, my significant other and I's rule with each other that we're not buying any more t-shirts without giving any more away. I think I'm going to be adding a couple from their Bison collection. Just a really fantastic collection. Hundreds of schools even outside of your Houston Cougars. But that's homefieldapparel.com, promo code HOLMAN12. Save on some just fantastic shirts and support our podcast here in the process. So going to start the positive vibes, Dustin. Cougar volleyball certainly did nothing to tamp down our enthusiasm about their start to the season going into last week after the way they closed on conference play against a certain burnt orange school in Austin, and a home win on Sunday as well against a pesky High Point team. A lot of good stuff to talk about tonight with Cougar volleyball.
Yeah, two wins and a loss since our last episode, and even the loss, kind of like you mentioned, I think one that gives you a lot of reason for optimism. The Cougs, I think, gave the number one team in the country, the Longhorns, a real test. They went to Austin and, faced a team that was on their own court, a team that was unbeaten, a team that had only dropped two sets all year, and both of those sets were against highly ranked teams, and both of those sets were by scores of 25-23, so, you know, 2 points as close as a set can be. Houston opened this match by taking a 14-4 lead in the opening set and winning the first set 25-17. Just a remarkable statement by the Cougs. The Longhorns did respond by taking sets 2 and 3 pretty comfortably, however, and despite an impressive Cougar effort in set 4, a set that was competitive the whole way, the Cougs dropped that one 25-22 and dropped the match 3-1. So despite the 3-1 loss, though, Sam, I mean, I think when you look at two of the four sets being as competitive as they were, really winning comfortably in the first set and being a, you know, real competitive, second best in set 4, facing a team that is number one, you know, that near unanimously, and, you know, facing a team that is, like I said, just pulverizing a highly ranked team. I think that has to be one that I have no qualms about penciling in the moral victory category.
No doubt. We knew coming in this opponent was the near unanimous number one, and even in, I think, what was an unsurprising loss, I think the surprising part was real positive, just how the Cougars really acquitted themselves well, I think as well as you could possibly expect. And I would say another data point that shows this to be, I think, the best Cougar volleyball team in a really good long while. You said this opponent had only lost two sets total before last Thursday against a slate of really, really good opponents. It's pretty reductive to say the national number one in any sport is very good, but no doubt a uniquely dominant opponent, and you didn't see the Cougars get overawed by the situation. I thought it really cool to see someone we haven't mentioned as much, but one of this team's, I think, real key veterans, Kennedy Warren, maybe hadn't talked about her as much, but had her best game of the current season, had a team-high 13 kills, hit an impressive 37% against the national number one. You had Annie Cook and Morgan Yanda also combined for 34 assists. I thought it was also really impressive, kind of on a team stat levels, that they held the Longhorns under their season hitting percentage for much of the match as well. I mean, there's no moral victories this year for any other game you play on the schedule, and, you know, we have extremely high expectations for this group and what they've, you know, shown they can do so far, but this performance against the best team in the sport was a really, really strong one. I don't think we're going to see a lot of teams this year even be that competitive with the Longhorns. I don't think they're going undefeated or anything like that. You know, even the number one, you know, slips up once or twice in the season, but I thought the Cougars really gave a great performance. Just didn't look intimidated by facing an opponent as, you know, ballyhooed as this one in their own house. And I think that's a massive credit to the young women in the program and, of course, their coaching staff as well.
Yeah, I thought it was honestly kind of roughly equivalent to the, you know, the Longhorn football team playing Alabama close. I think the football game result was maybe a little bit closer, but the Cougars did this one on the road, whereas, of course, UT was at home for that game. And, you know, kind of similarly, you saw Houston not entering the top 25 after the loss, but receiving votes after the loss in the coaches poll, making them roughly number 32 in the country with their only losses to number 23 Rice and obviously number one UT Austin with a win over the de facto number 33 Mississippi State. And I think also of interest, you know, UCF right there at number 25. So if you're Houston, I think what you've got to prove as you enter conference play now is that, you know, the AAC is a two-horse race between yourself and the Knights. And I think if you do that, you're going to the NCAA tournament for the first time in 22 years. And also, not to get too far ahead, but, you know, looking at that top 25 polls, like Baylor 14, BYU 16, Kansas the de facto 26. This is going to be a really fun
Kansas who is up Kansas who right now is up 2-0 on number one UT in Lawrence.
Whoa, wow, did not see that coming. But either way, this is going to be a really fun, hopefully two-horse race in the American this year, and this is going to be a really fun conference starting next year. And volleyball is more fun live and on TV than you probably think it is if you've never gone or watched. And if you go, you get to see in the cushy, you get to sit in the cushy club seats at the Fertitta Center with your Jan Ad ticket. So this is my unpaid advertisement for getting behind this Cougar volleyball program.
Yeah, co-signing everything Dustin said. Really, really fun live experience. I've been able to go a few times, even being an out-of-towner. I couldn't endorse it enough.
And as Sam mentioned earlier, the Cougs hosted High Point to close out non-conference play. This one was kind of surprisingly close. Houston actually dropped the first set 25-21, but they did come back and win the next three. But all three of those sets were only by a 2 or 3 point margin. So I think credit to the Panthers. They came out on the road. They held Houston to a hitting percentage of under 200. But Isabel Toy just made sure that Houston got what they needed, matching a career-high 20 kills to go with 4 blocks in this one, Sam.
Yeah, it never really felt like watching this one on ESPN Plus at any point that the Cougar offensive attack was really able to fully get out of its own way. In particular, it really just didn't seem like the best day for serving. But I think still really importantly, the Cougars were able to find a way after dropping that first one to win the next three sets. I didn't check every bit of the play-by-play data, but just watching this live, it felt like neither team ever fully pulled away from the other. I don't remember at any point where U of H or High Point had more than a 2 or 3 point lead. It was just incredibly back and forth. I mean, yeah, they were 7-5 coming in, but they played a pretty brutal non-conference. They had just actually played the previous Friday in Austin. It was a team that won 24 games last year and finished ahead of the Cougars in the RPI, and you're just coming in a trap game spot right there. You're coming off facing the, you know, the emotional high, the number one team in the country, and just not having your best offensive game. And it was, I think, very important. The Cougars overcame that and were able to get a good home win and not have anything blemishing your non-conference resume.
And then just hours ago here on Wednesday afternoon, the Cougars beat Tulane in 5 sets on the road to open AAC play. And you know, we mentioned it last week in the preview. This is a struggling Tulane team. And kind of like we said, you really want to prove that the American is a two-horse race. So this is definitely a road win that you wanted to get to open up your campaign. The Cougs, they went full cardiac Cougs. They dropped the first and third set, but they got the result. And, you know, dropping those sets, very, very competitive close sets, 25-22 and 26-24. However, you look at the three sets that Houston won, they were dominant. They won set two, 25-9, and they were always in control, winning sets four and five, both by seven-point margins. So it was maybe slightly less dramatic than it looks when you just see a five-set match, because the Cougars did always look like the better team. But, you know, definitely a lot of hoping that you didn't accidentally let one slip away. But ultimately, like you said, just happy to get the road win that you know you kind of needed.
Yeah, like you said, for a five-set match, surprisingly little drama. I looked at the box score further on this one. It's like it concentrated all of its drama to the third set. The third set had 14 ties and four lead changes, and I think the rest of the match combined had like five or six lead changes total. There was actually a chance for the Cougars to make this a little less dramatic. They had a set point in that third set they dropped with a 24-22 lead, but the Green Wave took the final 4 points there and got the 2-1 lead for the match. But good to see the Cougars bounce back, take the final two sets, not surrender the lead in either of those, and thankfully leave NOLA with a potentially pretty resume-damaging loss. I mean, ideally, from here on, you'd like more of your conference matches against the non-top-tier AAC teams to be a bit less dramatic, but still important you had the kind of veteran squad who was never out of it and didn't let kind of the weird nature of the first three sets really get in their head. It kind of reminded me of this. I went back and looked at it, and the box score kind of supported me. This sort of reminded me of last year's conference opener, that kind of bizarre loss the team took to Tulsa at home. The Cougs really dominated that one on the aggregate, but just found a way to lose three extremely close sets and just blew Tulsa out in the other two, and really started conference play off on a sour note that year with a bad loss. And importantly, that's not what happened today. And another career best for Isabel Toit. You mentioned it against High Point. She tied her career high with 20 kills in that one. 22 kills today. Really impressive 39.5% hitting percentage for the game. We talked about, I think, in the preseason, Abby Jackson really having the kind of monster breakout season to, you know, kind of be on the bubble as an All-American. And Jackson's come up big in some key moments this year, but Toit has just a 10th fewer kills per set and is hitting a lot better for the season. She has really been a monster attacking player for the Cougars. And that, yeah, Abby Jackson kind of alluded to it, didn't have a vintage offensive performance, but, you know, 14 digs and 9 kills. I think we saw her last year, I think, start to step up her defensive contributions. And it's just, it's nice to have a player as skilled as her who can, you know, contribute really offensively and defensively.
Yeah, so the Cougs back in action on Sunday at 1 o'clock when they host Cincinnati. Last year, the Bearcats went 19-9 overall, 14-6 in the American. They were number 53 in the RPI, only narrowly missed out on the NCAA tournament. They're 2-8 this year. The caveat is that they've played an absolute gauntlet of a schedule. There's really not an awful loss on their resume, despite the 2-8 record. They beat Florida State for one of their two wins. They took a top 10 Pitt team to five sets. They took a set off of a really good BYU team on the road. So, you know, if you see a 2-8 team, you definitely always want to face it. You always want to beat a 2-8 team, especially when you're playing at home like Houston is going to be doing. But if you're seeing that 2-8 record and expecting the Bearcats to just roll over, I think you may be surprised on this one.
Yeah. Obligatory mention that the Cougars will be facing former Cougar head coach Molly Alvey, who was at the program, I believe, until the 2011 season, off the top of my head, before taking the Bearcat job. Like you said, I actually, today, as I was putting together my notes, went to the Bearcat volleyball page and saw a 2-8, and I was like, ooh, they've really dropped off. But then, like you, kind of went line by line. I was just like, wow, they played a lot of really good teams to start their season. And yeah, like you said, getting a win over Florida State, taking Pitt to five sets, I think there's some not as good losses in those eight, and I think it might be a mental advantage for the Cougars that since he has not won away from their home court this year, I think one the Cougs should still expect to win, but not by any means your typical 2-8 team. If, you know, I don't think I'm overstating how good the Bearcats are to say probably the best non-UCF conference opponent you're going to see for TS Center this year.
Yeah, I was looking at that Cincinnati schedule, even though I was like, oh, okay, well, they lost to Illinois State. At least that's not a good loss. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to have to look. And Illinois State's 7-4 with a win over a top 25 Illinois team. So it's like, yeah, just, and just like so many of the teams on their schedule receiving votes are top 25. So battle tested for sure. And a team that, despite their record, is not going to be, you know, in awe of the Cougs or anything like that. Speaking of opening conference play, Cougar Soccer did that with a bang this past week, beating South Florida 2-1. And, you know, we mentioned it last week, Houston really, I thought, had a reach in, had a chance to kind of reboot their season after an underwhelming non-conference run. And now they can now say that they're 1-0 in the American with a win over last year's regular season champs, South Florida. And, you know, this one for a while kind of looked like it was going to end in a scoreless draw before Janice Singleton took a, honestly, exquisitely placed long ball from Madison Maddie Dishiara. The USF goalie came out to try and get the ball. Singleton chipped it perfectly over her to give Houston the lead. And unfortunately, you know, South Florida found an equalizer just 3 minutes later. But no fear, in the 84th minute, Houston comes up with a clever play off of a long free kick, leading to a Sam Weehe shot that was saved, the rebound falling right to Maddie Bowers, who put it away, giving Houston the 2-1 lead, ultimately the 2-1 win. So, you know, I think you have to call it a good win for the Cougs, Sam, even though, you know, both USF and U of H have struggled this year after going 1-2 in the AAC standings last year. But, you know, having the determination to respond after giving up the equalizer and getting the win over the team that was kind of a bugaboo for you last year is, I think, an encouraging result.
Would agree. I think we weren't the happiest campers when we were back here last Wednesday talking Cougar soccer, but I thought that was a really encouraging performance, even acknowledging USF isn't what they were last year. I mean, this is your first time beating them since 2004, and to do it with, I think, minimal drama, that's really cool. And I, again, one game at this point, but, you know, maybe this is the game that kind of, you know, starts a strong finish to the year. I don't know if this is a at-large postseason kind of team, but I think if this team finishes the year playing much better soccer than they started, I feel like, I'm not saying you quiet every concern you have, but I don't know, you feel a little bit better than maybe we felt talking about the loss at Texas Tech. But really, just, I don't think you can overstate it. I mean, I know that CC Cross goal against Rice is going to be very hard to top for a season highlight, but it cannot be overstated. That pass from Dishiara was inch perfect. You're not going to see a lot better long passes, just any kind of soccer you're watching, period. Just hit Singleton in stride, allowed her to stay onside, but still put her in great position for that one-on-one with USF's keeper. And I think an exquisite finish from Singleton as well. And I think, you know, you mentioned the Maddie Bowers winning goal. I think not coincidentally set up by Nadia Camasa drawing a free kick just outside of USF box just shows how dangerous she can be and what a, you know, engine she could be for a Cougar attack. I mean, we established it pretty well last week. This isn't the same USF team that won the conference and made the NCAAs last year, but this also isn't HBU or Sam Houston or that kind of opponent. I mean, this was still a very capable USF team, and last Thursday, I think you saw undeniably your most complete 90 minutes of soccer from this team this season.
And the Cougs certainly have a chance to try and build on that, as they'll be at East Carolina on Thursday evening. The Pirates, 6 wins, 3 losses, and a draw on the year, with wins over Florida and at SMU in their AAC opener. And this is a team that Houston has lost to 1-0 each of the past 2 seasons. They haven't scored a regulation goal against the Pirates since 2018. So playing on the road, definitely, I think, a challenge for the Cougs, Sam, and an opportunity to prove that they've kind of found a different gear in conference play.
Yeah, this is a team that was definitely kind of a bogey team for the Cougars, as you mentioned. I think this is actually the best ECU soccer team we've seen in a good long while. They just beat SMU 2-1 in Dallas, had won the previous Sunday 2-1 at home over Florida. They've created 12 goals in 10 matches against a pretty good strength of schedule. So I really think if the Cougars can leave Greenville with any kind of positive result, I'd be pretty happy about it. It would be nice to break, you know, kind of unwanted streak you've had against this specific opponent.
Yeah, I mean, you lost to ECU when you really should have beat them, and this is a time when they had a pretty good non-conference, and you had a pretty bad one. You're on the road, so that means you.
Exactly.
That means
it's our turn.
It's our turn. It's our turn to do the thing.
I was gonna say, if history's any indicator, it'll be a 88th minute complete fluke Cougar goal to win in a 1-0 game. I'm calling my shot here.
I love it. I love it. We do also want to mention Cougar Women's Golf opening their fall season, taking 6th place in a strong 14 team field at the Mo Memorial. Houston finished behind teams like A&M, UT Austin, and Florida, ahead of teams like Miami, SMU, Kansas, and Kansas State. And Sam, certainly the headline for Houston in this one is a really, really strong collegiate debut from freshman Natalie St. Germain. After shooting 2 over par in the first round, she was actually the low scorer of the tournament over rounds 2 and 3 combined, finishing 6 under par for 4th place on the individual leaderboard, just 3 strokes off the lead. Really impressive first college result for her, Sam.
Yeah, finished the 54-hole event at 6 under par, like you said, sole possession of 4th place among all individuals. And that's fourth place among all individuals in an event that included, like you said, the likes of the Cal College in Austin, A&M, UNC, Florida, Miami, another big name schools in the field. Really impressive today. Shot that 3-under par final round, 4 birdies to only 1 bogey. Really awesome start that she's had to her collegiate career. Hopefully one indicative of a really great rest of a freshman campaign to come. Wanted to also shout out one of her fellow freshmen, Alexa Saldana, and super senior Annie Kim, who each also finished in the individual top 30 for the event. Saldana was actually going into the final 18 holes in the top 20 and shot a respectable 1-over par for her first 2 rounds, but fell back a bit with a 5-over on her final round. I thought it was notable also, just looking at the team score, 3 of your top 4 performers were freshmen. And we talked about, I think, after last season's team failing to qualify, that if you're going to see significant improvement, you're going to likely need it from your incoming golfers. And yes, it's only one fall event, but yeah, you know, I would say hopefully an indicator of good things to come for the rest of the fall and spring season.
Yeah, only a single data point, but seeing you know, St. Germain fourth, Saldana and Moa Svenskjold also finishing in the top 32 in a really strong 14-team field is what I would categorize as a strong data point, to be sure. The first of 4 fall events for the Cougs, they'll be back in action this weekend in Norman at the Schooner Fall Classic. Houston competed in this event a year ago. They finished 13th out of 15 in what was a very strong field. Will probably be, you figure, a strong field again this year. So that 13th place did end up being pretty indicative of the struggles that Houston had last year. So again, not wanting to overreact to individual fall results, but I am excited to get a kind of quick early, you know, how far have you come data point, Sam.
Exactly. Would agree with that.
All right. And then we'll go ahead and get into the main story, and that is the Rice football preview. The Cougs having the Bayou Bucket game this coming Saturday, hosting the Owls from Rice. The Owls in year 5 of the Mike Bloomgren era, which I think is at least a little bit surprising to say, given that Bloomgren just had his winningest season at Rice last year. That season was going 4-8 with a losing record in a bad conference USA and being the 5th worst team in the country, according to SP Plus. Kind of an interesting start to year 5, though. They opened the season pretty unsurprisingly getting pulverized by USC. They played McNeese, a pretty bad FCS team, in week 2, and unsurprisingly got a comfortable win. But, you know, surprising result in the year, in week 3, Sam, ending the nation's longest winning streak by beating UL Lafayette 33-21. The Cajuns had won 15 straight games after losing their season opener last year. And, you know, I think it remains to be seen certainly how good they are in the post-Billy Napier era, but, I mean, they just had beaten Arizona State Slayers Eastern Michigan pretty comfortably the week prior. So I think, honestly, you have to treat that like a pretty good win for the Owls.
Yeah, and you're not in a position to, I think, pick nits about the quality of Rice non-conference wins. So I think this was Rice's first FBS non-conference win since, like, the 2015 or 2016 season, somewhere in there. So, you know, maybe Mike Bloomgren has another good year or two there. You start to question the strength of FBS non-conference wins that aren't like UMass. But, yeah, a good win for the Owls through 3 games. I think this absolutely looks like it could be Mike Bloomgren's best team on South Main and capable of at least clearing the bar for bowl eligibility in, you know, their last season Conference USA, a conference that outside of maybe UTSA or UAB doesn't really have anything close to, you know, strong proven opponents. So, you know, I think for a team like Rice, that's sort of an unknown at this point, it's got to be kind of hopeful. You think, okay, well, yeah, UTSA and UAB weeks are going to be tough, although notably Rice beat UAB in Birmingham last year, so not an opponent that necessarily this team has any mental block about facing. There's a lot of potentially winnable games on there that if this Owls team really is indeed improved, you know, the rest of that league is so weak, I think that, you know, raises your ceiling for what they can do pretty highly. I guess we'll start on the offensive side of the ball. I thought somewhat surprisingly at the beginning of the season, Rice went with Wiley Green as their week 1 starter, only lasted until the middle of their opener against USC, went down with a hand injury and had it basically confirmed to us that he will not be back this week. And filling in his place is somebody who very much a poser off you, Dustin. Did the Orange County to Houston move about 12, 13 years after the Cool Kids did. TJ McMahon, Anaheim reppin', I think has filled in pretty capably for Wiley Green. 7 touchdown passes through 2.5 games. I will say 6 interceptions and 51 attempts against 2 FBS opponents is pretty loud. But I would say it's probably, even if Green was healthy, I would say McMahon's probably a bit better of a matchup for the Owls against that aggressive Cougar defensive front. He's not really, I would say, a running quarterback, but it was a good deal more mobile than my recollection of Wiley Green. I mean, again, not close. I know Cougar fans, anytime they hear can move around the pocket, dual threat quarterback, are starting to get the trauma of facing Frank Harris and Jalen Daniels and having Donovan Smith periodically break off big runs, but not close to what we saw with Jalen Daniels, not really that close either to Donovan Smith or Frank Harris. But of course, you know, bears repeating, if the Cougars don't effectively spy him, I don't doubt McMahon can make the Cougars pay at least a couple times. It was kind of feast or famine last Saturday. The feast being that he threw for 300 plus yards against the Raging Cajuns, the famine being three interceptions that quite frankly allowed the Raging Cajuns to stay in that game a lot longer than the game stats said that they should have. I was really surprised looking at the box score. I looked at that box score and kind of looked at what ULL did against them and was like, how did Rice not win this by more than 12 points? We're being honest. But I think what's really interesting before I pass off to you about this Rice offense is that, you know, kind of the blueprint we thought for Mike Bloomgren at Rice was recreating that Stanford pound the rock. He, I think, coined the term intellectual brutality style of offense that they did out west. And the irony is now in year five of Mike Bloomgren, I would say Rice is having arguably his, you know, best back-to-back offensive performances period, and that the majority of that success, I would say, in these past two games has come from the passing game. And I don't know, maybe a sign also that Bloomgren is giving a bit more freedom to his second-year offensive coordinator, Marcus Tuiasosopo, to run their offense.
Yeah, you mentioned kind of Louisiana Lafayette game and seeing the quarterback play from TJ McMahon, and certainly interesting, you know, it's kind of eye popping, like you mentioned, seeing a Rice quarterback throw for 300 plus yards was a little bit surprising. A very fun line: 303 yards, three touchdowns, three interceptions, took three sacks. But you know, two of those three interceptions coming in the first quarter, including a pick six. I thought he, you know, pretty nicely shook off those two early mistakes, and really Rice was pretty dominant the rest of the way, and they just really dominated the possession for the most part. They ran 80 plays to Louisiana's 43. They had touchdown drives of 83, 75, 65, and 70 yards, eating up an average of over 6 minutes of clock. You know, and defensively, they just never let UL Lafayette get going. The Cajuns, on so few plays, managed just 175 total yards and 9 first downs, kind of like you mentioned, making you look at the box score and go, you know, how were they even within 12 points? But, you know, the answer is turnovers, and this is a Houston secondary that's going to want to, I think, be recreating McMahon's, you know, couple of weeks of struggling with throwing the ball to the correct team. And certainly you have to respect someone that just threw for 300 yards, and the second Houston secondary hasn't looked, you know, the best at keeping opponents from throwing for yards this season. But facing, like you mentioned, the fourth most mobile QB that you've faced in four games this year is exciting. And facing a QB that, you know, has been throwing the ball away a fair amount is exciting as well for this Cougar defense, even though, like I said, you have to respect the fact that he did just throw for 300 plus yards in the past week. But, you know, in this offense, and you mentioned it, even if, you know, it is Bloomgren throwing it more than usual, they still ran the ball again. I think it was, what, like 45 times or something on Saturday against the Cajuns. So this is still a team that's not going to entirely just throw the ball around the yard. They're going to, you know, I think try to at least run the ball between the tackles somewhat against Houston, which is, I think, also kind of exciting in its own right, because, you know, I think that's probably one of the better things that you can do against this Houston defense as a Cougar fan is try to run the ball between the tackles.
Yeah, and it's not to say the Owls don't have a difference maker at running back. I think Ari Broussard is probably the guy you're going to see get the majority of the opposing carries, but he's very much a bruising between the tackles kind of back, which I agree with you. That's not a matchup you totally hate if you're a Cougar fan, and I think you're still going to see a team that brands itself as intellectual brutality try to do intellectual brutality, which quite honestly is actually, I think, doing this Cougar defense a favor. I thought one guy who's been a revelation as well in their offense, Luke McCaffrey, was actually the starter at quarterback last year against the Cougars, moved to wide receiver in the offseason, has been the Rice quarterback's favorite target by a pretty wide margin through 3 weeks. They also used him in the running game a couple times against UL Lafayette. He's going to be someone I watch maybe for Rice to, you know, run a gadget play that they haven't shown on film yet. He's somebody, you know, even if he's not a Division I quarterback anymore, capable of being used on a trick pass. And they have a couple other veteran receivers, Brad Rosner, big target, a guy who had a real strong 2019, but missed most of the last two seasons with injuries, a West Virginia grad transfer, Isaiah Esdale, and a veteran tight end in Jack Bradley. I think the matchup I'm most interested in when Rice is on the field is, you know, the offensive line, and Bloomgren's a former O-line coach. Rice, in general, you know, made a big deal of, you know, offensive line development being a part of intellectual brutality and what Mike Bloomberg wants to do there. They're actually, they're starting a guy, their center, the ultra veteran Shea Baker. I don't know if you remember this, Dustin, he actually started the 2018 Bayou Bucket game against the Cougars, just passed 3,000 career snaps played for the Owls, which is, you know, quite an achievement. But they also had two redshirt freshmen starting last week and have been playing a bunch this year. So maybe opportunities for the Cougar defensive front to do what they do best against what is certainly the fourth most mobile quarterback they're going to be facing this year. I wouldn't say, you know, this certainly isn't an opposing offense that should be underestimated. I think it really does look like at the very least the most functional one that Rice has put on the field under this current staff. But I think the Cougs match up actually pretty well here. And I'm not insulting our opponent by saying that the prior three opponents' offenses were a good bit better than the one that we'll see in TDCU Saturday evening. But that's not to say that the Cougar defense has given me enough confidence that they will assuredly shut out this Rice offense. Just saying this is the fourth best offense we'll face this year and saying that U of H will shut them down for four quarters are two quite different things. And I'm not ready to go to the second place just yet.
Yeah, and I think on the other side of the ball, you look at the Rice Owl team, and it's, I think, an open question how much they've improved after being one of the 10 worst defenses in the country last year. You know, certainly we just mentioned they looked very impressive against the Raging Cajuns, holding them 9 first downs, as previously mentioned, and you know, I think really playing well, giving up just the 21 points, despite, you know, really only giving up 14 because 7 of those came on a pick six and a couple of other interceptions in this one as well. So I thought a really strong defensive performance, but, you know, very much in contrast to their only other FBS game this year, when basically USC looked like they were running their offense on air and did whatever they want for the entirety of that game for the most part. So, you know, I think that does remain an open question, and it's another team that is probably, you would characterize as not the strongest defensively. And after seeing this Cougar team, it feels like maybe you'd hope it's the fourth strongest defense out of the four that you face this year. And it's just another, it's a defense where I think Houston has to come out and, you know, build a little confidence, start to get your offense clicking a little bit more. If you can't start to kind of figure some things out and maybe try some, you know, have some success in the running game, you know, find some different receivers. You know, the last game where, you know, I think it was Tank Dell was the only receiver that caught more than like 2 or 3 passes. A wide receiver, obviously, not counting Tazon Henry, but, you know, start to see some more of those young receivers a little bit more. This needs to be the kind of game where your offense is able to, you know, stretch its legs and flex a little bit.
Yeah, like you, I think I'm having a bit harder of a time getting a read on this Rice defense. Well, give them the tiniest bit of reprieve that, you know, the 66 points that USC scored, 21 of those came off pick sixes, but the rest of the stats aren't so kind because you can only slap so much lipstick on a pig when you allow over 9 yards per play. But, you know, against McNeese and ULL, the Rice defense held both those opponents to well under 300 yards of total offense. That ULL game was very emphatic, and you could acknowledge that ULL probably isn't as strong as they have been the prior few seasons. But when you're Rice, and at this point you're holding any FBS opponent to, you know, especially one that's been a perennially good program recently, to 175 total yards and 4 yards per play, that's a meaningful data point for them. And that they return starters on basically every level of defense. They have some intriguing young guys stepping in as well. Someone that really was intriguing to me up front is redshirt freshman interior defensive lineman Blake Bonish, listed at 6'3", 324 pounds. And, you know, Rice hasn't always been able to, on either line, get the guys, you know, the real big interior guys, the guys who can occupy blockers, be space eaters, maybe open things up for the guys immediately behind them on the defense, occasionally collapse the pocket. We'll note that Rice's most experienced defensive lineman, DeBraylon Carroll, who missed all of last year injured, has not played much, or hasn't played at all, I believe, to start this season. A lot of experience in that linebacker group, multi-year starters, Treshawn Chamberlain and Myron Morrison. They got a Rutgers grad transfer in Chris Conti, and 3 multi-year stars returning in the secondary. So no shortage of experience at all levels. And while I think the Cougar offense should do more against Rice than they did the previous few weeks, I don't think it's a certainty we'll see that. And I think we're certainly going to be facing an Owl defense that's at a high ebb in terms of confidence so far this year, after, you know, kind of opening their year against a very, very difficult assignment in the USC Trojans.
And I guess ultimately kind of my last thought on this one is really just broader. I'm really curious to see how this Cougar team responds. You know, it's they're going to be in front of, let's be honest, not the most overwhelmingly large and supportive crowd in the history of TDECU Stadium. They are going to be coming off of a couple of losses, including looking pretty bad in the last one, the kind of loss that had your coach unapologetically saying some pretty strong words in the public sphere afterwards. So, you know, there's a lot of different ways you can see a team respond to that, and it's whether that's going to be, you know, look getting down on themselves after, you know, and if it's a Rice team, like we said, I think even in the best possible scenario where Houston responds really well and comes out and wins this game comfortably, that's not going to be Rice making no plays in this one. Rice is a good enough team, it looks like, that they're going to be able to make some plays in this one. And how do you respond to that? Do you get down on yourself, or is Houston going to be able to come out and look like, you know, Houston facing Rice? You're a more talented team on this, you know, your roster is more talented than Rice is. You know, this is the game that you should come out and look like the more talented team and be able to exert yourself, and, you know, kind of exert your will on this game. But it's also a team that's good enough that if you come out and start feeling sorry for yourself when things go wrong and start feeling like, you know, the season is getting away from you, this is a team that's going to sense that. This is a team that's going to jump all over that. So I think overall, just team attitude for Houston is going to be my most important X factor in this one.
This game could just go so many ways. I don't think the scenario where UH comes out Saturday night with their hair on fire and beats Rice soundly is a really unrealistic one. But I also wouldn't be surprised if we see some kind of repeat of the last few weeks where the team is kind of hit or miss in the first half. Rice's veteran receiver group is able to make some things happen against Cougar secondary that's been shaky at times this year. And we look up and this is not a blowout in the second half. I really don't know which of those general scenarios is more likely. And I don't think any team can truly rebuild its confidence from one game. But, you know, coming off that embarrassing opening week loss to Tech last season, we saw the 2021 Cougar team really start to get their mojo back, really had an emphatic win at Rice Stadium last year. The players and the coaches have very much stuck to the, you know, everything is in front of us still line after the KU loss, and it'd be a nice step in the right direction to win this one and win it with minimal drama. It's not going to heal everything, but it would be a nice start, certainly.
I haven't seen the lines yet. What is the line in this one? Do you know?
I think it was 17.5 last I checked, which is in the last 24 hours. Might have moved a bit, but it should still be at least somewhere around 17.5.
Yeah, I'm seeing 17.5 as I pull up. Yeah, I don't know. I would I don't want to say this because I said this last week, but I would be pretty happy. I think I'd be fairly happy if Houston hits that. That would be, like I said, not going to entirely wipe the taste stuff out of your mouth of the last couple of weeks, but would be a step in the right direction as Houston finishes up non-conference play.
Yeah, I think if nothing else, we're seeing a Rice team that is considerably better than the team from last season. I don't think if your baseline expectation is a 45-7 kind of win, that's super realistic. It's not impossible. I'd be very happy if that happened, but I think this is at least somewhat better opponent than that.
All right, well, that is as good a place as any to go ahead and wrap up our Rice preview. Before we go, though, definitely going to talk about some Week 4 college football action. Sam, taking this as kind of a viewing guide, starting on Thursday, this might be a kind of skip it Thursday. The only game that looks remotely watchable is West Virginia, Virginia Tech, and that's two what looks like below average P5. Are you really tuned in for Coastal Georgia State, or what?
I mean, Coastal is fun. Like, I'm not saying you should rearrange any kind of Thursday plans unless you're a Coastal or Georgia State fan to watch this game. But I don't know, man. If you're folding clothes and you need something football on in the background, you can do worse than Coastal Georgia State. You know, I know Georgia State's 0-3, but it's 0-3 against a good strength of schedule. They play in the old Brave Stadium. Coastal is really, really fun to watch. I want to try to catch as many games or bits of as many games as I can while Grayson McCall's there, because, you know, I'm sure they're not going to be a bad team once he graduates, but I don't know. The team will have a different mojo once their longtime starting quarterback leaves, and yeah, I don't know. It's your folding clothes game of the night. I'm not going to overly recommend it, but I think if you're going to half watch a game or have a game on the background, it should be Coastal Georgia State and not that mediocre-ass P5 matchup also on Thursday.
Fair enough. I just saw 3-0 versus 0-3, but you've convinced me that may be the better game of the two.
Yep. But watch it be like a 5 or 6 touchdown blowout, and I've just made an ass of myself on the show again.
And Friday, your three Friday games. Yeah, Virginia, Syracuse, Nevada, Air Force, Boise State, UTEP. I'm going to say for the second straight week, go find something fun to do with your significant other or friend or family member on Friday that is not watching college football, I think.
Yeah, completely co-sign that. Boise State is only a 16.5-point favorite, Dustin. Just want to throw out there. Just seems kind of weirdly low for how bad UTEP's been. But I guess Boise hasn't been that good. But yeah, not really a Friday night slate to remember. Find something non-college football-y to do.
And then Saturday, much more interesting 11 o'clock slate, I think you'd have to say, than the one we were complaining about last week. Definitely going to begin by mentioning Baylor, Iowa State. Baylor still within the top 20, despite the loss to BYU. And then Iowa State, a team that hasn't lost at home in Big 12 play in a couple of years. Despite replacing their quarterback, they got a 3-0 record to start the season, so feeling pretty good about themselves. But, you know, I think definitely some big questions about the Iowa State strength of schedule, having played what looks like a pretty mediocre Hawkeyes team as well as an FCS team in Ohio. So maybe not the best 3-0 resume in the country, but, you know, definitely what's going to be a jacked up game day atmosphere in Ames, and should be a fun future conference game of U of H's Baylor and Iowa State.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think you can make a decent argument that the early slate on Saturday might be the strongest part of the day. You have Baylor, Iowa State, good game for all the reasons you mentioned, two teams that should be at least in the upper part of the Big 12 this year. You also have the Sonny Dykes revenge game. TCU yes. goes to SMU to try to take back the iron skillet that SMU won last year with TCU's current head coach. I think you might actually get a half decent game to atmosphere in Highland Park for that one, in addition to an SMU team that has been entertaining so far this year, you know, getting to face this conference rival, a game that I think is going to be pretty personal with how Sonny Dykes left SMU for their Metroplex rival last year. Duke at Kansas, a game that a lot of people had been campaigning for College Game Day to do as well. And we haven't even mentioned all the good ones here yet, Dustin. Maryland at Michigan. I don't know if that's going to be a good game, but Michigan's finally playing someone with a pulse, and Maryland has been at least interesting offensively with Taulia Tagovailoa. I'm genuinely not sure how I'm going to double screen Saturday morning. I'm leaning Baylor, Iowa State, and then whatever's the most competitive out of TCU, SMU, and Duke, Kansas, but not sure yet.
Oh, man, I just have a hard time putting alerts on for a Big 12 game that's a one team favored by 17 points. But maybe, yeah, you know, if that one gets real dicey and Michigan's having a hard time after playing that cupcakey strength of schedule, that would be entertaining and worth keeping an eye on. But
yeah, that's not going to be one of the double screen games unless it's like a close game, middle of the fourth quarter. Just one to keep an eye on. I think definitely below the three games we mentioned before that, though. USF at Louisville, though, might be interesting to see what the Bulls have, too.
I'm kind of curious to see what they do against the Louisville team that I'm still not quite sure what to make of 1-2, but with a win over UCF. So I'm sure the Bulls would like to figure something out and you know, try to have at least as good a result against the Cardinals as their fellow Florida school there. But yeah, the battle for the iron skillet is going to be a lot of fun. TCU really not having gotten tested by anybody in the post-Gary Patterson era yet, having played a miserable Colorado team and then an FCS Tarleton State team in their second result. So and then, like you mentioned, 3-0 Duke versus 3-0 Kansas. Hard to believe we're living in a world with 3-0 Duke versus 3-0 Kansas, but really plenty of games to kind of keep your head on a swivel on in that 11 o'clock time slot there. Getting into the afternoon, you've got UT Austin at Texas Tech, definitely one worth keeping an eye on there. Getting the you just, you know, crossing your fingers that the Red Raiders are able to get a good result in that one. Memphis heads kind of facing a bad North Texas team. You'd expect them to win that one fairly comfortably. And then you know, James Madison, App State, I think it's gonna be a really fun one at 2:30. That JMU team looking very, very salty, just brand new to FBS football. And obviously App State we've talked about a couple times as well. So I think, you know, pretty decent little afternoon slate here as well.
Yeah, if you're a little more conventional, I guess, Florida at Tennessee, I will say, not going to ever really give a throaty recommendation to SEC football, but Tennessee is a pretty fun offense to watch, but better options. Like you said, UT Austin at Tech will be interesting. I'll be curious to see how competitive the Red Raiders can make that. Usually the Longhorns at least make it a close game in Lubbock. They don't usually blow the Red Raiders out there, but we shall see. Cincy gets Indiana, a game last year that ended up being a Cincinnati win, was a much closer game than the final score would indicate there. And I think Cincy should still be a sizable favorite of Indiana, but yeah, I don't know, certainly the most game opponent that they've seen since their week one trip to Arkansas.
Is there one other game in that at 3 o'clock that I'm actually going to, I think, be watching? Because it won't be on Pac-12 Network, thank goodness. Oregon at Washington State, the Cougars 3-0 with that upset win over Wisconsin. So they get a what looks like a pretty strong rebounding Oregon team at home. That's going to be, you'd imagine, a fun atmosphere in Pullman, and should be one that might actually be more competitive than you probably would have guessed maybe before the season.
Yeah, that Washington State defense versus Oregon offense matchup, I think is going to be a pretty good one. Not that you or I will be able to watch it, though.
Yeah. And then 5 o'clock, Navy at ECU. I guess that's a AAC game that you got to at least kind of keep an eye. I'd be surprised if the midshipmen are very close in that one. However, 6 o'clock, you got Tulane hosting Southern Miss. That again, that's a, Southern Miss team struggling. So certainly if you're Tulane coming off the high of beating Kansas State, you'd like to continue that momentum. And, if you're Tulane, you can, I would guess they might be the first team in FBS to double their win total from last year if they're able to pull that one out.
Tulane's first chance to open the season 4-0 since their 1998 undefeated season. I think they have a decent chance of getting it. Apparently, they're expecting a pretty good crowd at Yeoman for that one. So, yeah, that would be pretty wild, even though, again, two of those games not against the best opponent, but just to go from 2-10 to opening your season 4-0.
Yeah, and then not a whole lot for me in the evening slate that I'm thrilled about. 7 o'clock, you got Kansas State at Oklahoma. I think a week ago, I would have had a much easier time believing that was going to be kind of an upset alert game for the Sooners in Norman. But after K-State loses to Tulane and Oklahoma just demolished Nebraska, not that means a whole lot, but I feel more inclined to believe that one might not be super close. USC at Oregon State is an 8:30 kickoff. That's probably my one evening game that I'm at least a little bit excited about. Of course, that's one you can't watch because it's on bleeping Pac-12 bleeping networks. But at least to keep an eye on the result, a 3-0 top 10 USC team at a 3-0 feeling, one of those traditional really hard places to win teams. Oregon State feeling good about life, and I think getting a really exciting test for them.
Yeah, I was going to mention, which you said earlier, K-State and Oklahoma. I have it on here, but not very optimistic it's going to turn into a competitive game. I have a hard time seeing Brett Venables, the defensive mind that he is, really struggling against a team in K-State that it seems like everyone who's either faced K-State or is a K-State fan seems to acknowledge just a team offensively that just struggles to throw the forward pass. I don't think that is a recipe for success in Norman. But apparently, and I don't know if this is true. This is unsubstantiated, but I'm going to try if there's even a chance it's the case. Fubo TV, which is like one of those smart TV apps. Dustin, don't worry. This is not some kind of, I didn't get some kind of $10 to plug Fubo TV 49 into our podcast, 49 minutes in our podcast thing. Apparently, there you can access Pac-12 Network in any part of the country. I'm going to at least do some research into that. If that's true, and you're able to watch what I think is going to be a pretty good USC Oregon State game, just remember that I made it possible, or the random person I saw who say that on the internet made it possible. That's a really exciting one. That's one I am going to go to great lengths to see this game because I think it is going to be a good late night game, and I really hope the Trojans and Beavs don't let me down there.
All right. Sounds good, Sam. We'll keep our fingers crossed for that. And I think that's where we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode of the Scott and Holman podcast on our way out. We always want to give a big thank you to our Scott and Holman podcast Patreon supporters who continue to generously. I can words. I don't know why I'd really want that to be genuine.
Genuinely and generously.
They both genuinely and generously support the work that Sam and I do on a weekly basis to put out multiple episodes of Cougar content. So thank you, you guys. If you do enjoy this podcast on a regular basis and you're at a point in your life where you feel like you can afford a couple of bucks, we would love for you to pitch those in. You can go to shpodcast.com/support. You will find links to make a recurring monthly donation on our Patreon, give us a one-time tip on PayPal, or buy some merchandise with our street sign logo on it. As always, we would like to encourage you to reach out and say hi. You can email us shpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at SH Podcast. That's it for us. If you made it to the end, you are absolutely the best. And as always,
go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door in. No cap. No cap. No cap.